This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. Today on the podcast, I get to spend a little bit of time with Dee Lanier. Did I say it right?
It's Lanier.
Lanier. Dee, yep. Lanier. Welcome, Lanier. Dee.
Like Mount Rainier, but just, you know, Lanier.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm really glad that we could connect on the podcast. I don't know if you remember, but I met you 2 years ago, briefly. You were at the GAF Summit in Kitchener, Ontario.
Yes.
And I was chatting with Jeffrey Humphreys, and you were chatting with him, and we just kind of said, hey, how's it going? And that was it, which is really too bad, because since then I've kind of learned more about, you know, what you do and some of the other things you do outside of education. And had I known all that stuff before, it would have been awesome to like sit down with you and actually chat. But you know what? I get to do that now. So I'm glad that I have this opportunity.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do in education?
Sure. Goodness. Well, I get to do a lot of things in education, but my full-time job is I work at Charlotte Lab School in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I am a STEM specialist with a team that we call Quest, and my role is really with technology. So I help facilitate everything technology pertaining to our Quest classes, second through fifth grade. And then as we grow up in terms of grade levels, I'll continue to move up and help transition those grade levels in technology as well.
What is a Quest class?
I'm glad you asked. So Quest is like our STEM classes. It's really investigative and inquiry-based learning, all around thematic topics that are problem-based opportunities for our kids. So every Quest is something that the kids are having to solve collectively. And then, you know, they're using the disciplines of science and ELA and math. And then, of course, I'm also implementing technology. And we also get to do some making all around whatever that problem they're trying to solve is. So I was sharing when we were off the air about our problem of sound in our building. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually one of their quests. That's one of the problems they are trying to solve in our fourth grade classes. They are trying to figure out ways to solve the sound problem that exists within our building.
Okay. So do you have like your own classroom space, and then the classes come to you, you spend some time with them, then they go on to like another class or back to their home room?
So my classes are, this is a really difficult question to answer because it's a little interesting, depending on the grade level. So we do rotations, for each grade level, where the kids are in a committee. And so they may be with the ELA teacher for a minute, they may be with the ELA teacher for half of a day or maybe 2 days, and then they rotate and they go to a next station, they go to the next station. So when they come to me, we're specializing in technology. But that's the way we do it with certain grade levels, with fourth and fifth grade. We have an entire block, and depending on where we are in our curriculum, they may be getting all technology. So right now they're working on Google Sites, using the new sites and submitting everything in classroom. So it just depends.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny. I asked a question and you kind of, you're thinking about it. It's cool to hear about the different, like this is the first time I've heard of something like this. I know Sam Patterson out in California is, an innovation type teacher.
Yep.
So it sounds familiar to what you're doing, but we don't have that here where I'm at in Ontario that I know of. Mm-hmm. Now that I've said it, you know, somebody will tweet me and say, hey, have it in Toronto or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, I haven't heard of it before. But it's pretty interesting. It sounds like you get in deep with like stuff that you love to do, and the kids probably get into real awesome detail in terms of what you're doing with them around tech.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing I love is that they don't have just a distinct technology class, right? Which is where most schools have their in their model, is that they have a technology class. Here, it's they're really learning that the technology is just useful for creating whatever they need to create. And so it's part of Quest. They don't have a tech class. They have a Quest class. And the technology is necessary for recording, for creating, for archiving, for all of those different purposes. But it's not the end all in and of itself. It's just their
right, so,
tools in order to capture it and then to showcase it.
Right, right. So the tools are there to get to the goal.
Right.
Okay. Very good. How long have you been doing that type of work?
So this is my first year at Charlotte Lab School as a staff member. I've been.
Okay.
Yeah. So for the last several years, I've been in education. I first started out as a high school teacher teaching early, and that's really where my love for technology and Gracious integration really emerged. And by the way, Roland, do you happen to know Ken Shelton?
I know who Ken is, but I don't know him personally.
So if it sounds like I'm a little distracted, I got to let you know, because it's kind of funny. So Ken lives in Los Angeles, but he is in Charlotte right now, and he's speaking at an event, and who just popped up in my window right next to me right now was Ken.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I'm familiar with Ken's work, and I know, you know, like I know both of you work with EdTech team.
Yes.
It's funny that you mentioned Ken, because something happened recent. I've been following him on Twitter for a while now, and something happened like a month ago, and he started following me, and I was like, you know, when somebody that you kind of look up to, they don't really know you look up to them, but then all of a sudden they follow you on Twitter and you're like, wow, that's awesome. I finally made it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's my Ken Shelton story.
Ken Shelton story. Yeah. Well, I think we all have a Ken Shelton story.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you for sharing some of that history around education with us. And please do keep, if anything fun happens, you know, jump in and cut me off, because this is what it's all about, right? Like, I like to say that my podcast doesn't have any rules. So I want to keep that momentum going.
I was like, I got to just go ahead and let you know. I'm a little distracted because Ken just popped in a window right beside me. But
no, that's fair.
Yeah. So just to let you know, yeah. So I was a high school teacher for 6 years. And it really wasn't until I started using technology as part of my curriculum that my students started to engage the content much more. And then that's when I pursued becoming a Google certified trainer, and because of that certification, then I was given the privilege of teaching my teachers and how to utilize tech. And because I was credentialed, if you will, then they were able to earn credits for that. And then it kind of picked up from there. I volunteered to speak at a couple of conferences and just sharing what I was doing in the classroom with my kids. So first started out in high school, and then eventually went on to work at another school that was elementary and middle school, and really was their technology integration specialist there, with the same goal: how do we integrate tech so that the teachers continue to do what they're doing, but just amplify it with technology and not just have a separate category for tech. And then I've, you know, been on this speaking circuit, if you will, with EdTech team, and having that extreme privilege to do what I do there. And then the last couple of years, I took a hiatus from the classroom and started a nonprofit organization where I was the executive director. And so while I was still doing professional development for teachers, my full-time job was really that organization. So now I'm back in the classroom and absolutely love it. But it's always been about the cause first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's working directly with kids. Oh, I hear a big beep. Yep.
Yeah, those are my kids going out for recess now.
There it is. So whether it's working first and foremost with kids and helping them in not only their technology, but really, or their use of technology, but their overall learning, me helping build their self-esteem, their sense of respect for self and others and community, that's always been my goal. Mm-hmm. With Uncommon, which was my organization, I also had the privilege of helping their parents.
Right.
Their dads in particular. And so it's always been an amazing journey, I feel like, that I've been privileged to be a part of.
I'm so happy that you did bring up Uncommon, because I do want to talk about that, because that's one of the things that I've kind of seen that you were doing. I thought you were doing that on the side. Now I know it's the other way around, but I do want to talk about Uncommon because just of the influence it has on men, fathers in particular. But before I get there, I want to ask you, okay, so I really enjoyed your story about how you started in this role. Those are the best stories because everybody's got to start somewhere, right?
Right.
And it's like people always, I find that people forget about that portion of somebody's life. Like, you know, for you to be speaking, to be on with EdTech team, going around presenting, positively influencing other people, there had to be a start. So it's really cool to hear that. But what brought you to education in the first place? Like, how did you end up deciding one day, I'm going to be a teacher?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question because I'll first say that in college, it was a deep interest of mine. I always wanted to influence education on higher levels. I imagined myself being like a superintendent or working on changing not just a school, but a whole system of schools and a whole really challenge the pedagogical system that is very prominent in America, which is, you know, based on the banking process, the sage on the sage on the stage, just disseminating information and the kids having to memorize it by rote and then spit it back to you on a test and then move on to the next subject. I mean, all of that disturbed me, and how discipline is handled, how order is praised over creativity and imagination. So all of those things were things that I was interested in. But my focus educationally was on sociology of education. Mm-hmm. How I ended up in the classroom was kind of on accident. I had a different job that was straight out of college, and I didn't enjoy it, primarily because it was all administrative. But I worked outside of a coffee shop / donut shop that was across the street from my first high school teaching experience. And I would just see the kids come out every day. I'd sell kids that looked like me, kids that were from the inner city, kids that didn't look like they really liked to be at school, because as soon as the bell rang, they came out, they untucked, both literally and figuratively. And I thought, I just want to go over there. I want to find out what that school's about. I want to find out what those kids are up to over there. And I want to find out if I can volunteer. And I did. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I was offered a job.
Wow.
And they didn't know I was sort of between my wife and I looking for a new job, but I didn't come there looking for a job. I didn't share them my resume for a job. I shared them my resume so that they would hopefully see me as qualified for a mentoring program. And mm-hmm. Not only did they say yes to that, they asked if I would be willing to teach part-time. And then I really just grew in the role. And that was it's a good 12 years ago.
Good for you for, you know, feeling like what you were talking about, what you didn't like in education, and, you know, envisioning yourself as being someone at some point who would help change it to break the status quo, I guess, for lack of better words. And then it's really neat that you end up volunteering at a school and they offer you a job. Like, I've never heard that before, because that's really not the way the system works where I'm from. So it's neat to hear that. You know, I mean, people here do volunteer in schools, for a couple of reasons. One might be that they're just people in the community who want to help out, but, you know, they have another job, or they just don't want to be a teacher, but they like to help. And then there's, you know, the teacher candidates who are known to be in teacher's college, learning the craft of teaching,
right,
and then getting their feet wet by spending time in schools in different divisions, kind of getting a feel for what it looks like to actually run a classroom and how it works in different grades. So again, your story, it's neat to hear the start, and I'm glad that I asked, because I like to ask each one of my guests, you know, how did you get into education? What led you down this path? And the responses have been varied so far, which is pretty cool for the people listening to hear about all the different ways that you could get into this line of work.
Right.
But yeah, so thank you for sharing that. I want to shift gears into the organization you started, which is called Uncommon. And you told us that you were the executive director, but you no longer are the executive director.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you still connected with the organization?
I am. I am really in a volunteer role. I help maintain some of the mobile app and field questions that come from the community. And I sort of act as an advisor to the board of the organization.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I would love to hear the story about how Uncommon came to be.
Wow. All right. So I'll try and give the 1 minute version. First of all, I think I even accidentally said that I started Uncommon. I did not start the organization. The organization had already begun, and it was envisioned by a man by the name of Greg Cash, he and his wife, and they really just wanted to attack societal problems in a different way. And at some point had come across some of the correct stats that prove that if you go at the root source of many social ills in America and actually across the globe, whether they be homelessness or joblessness or human trafficking, obesity, incarceration, I mean, multiple problems that we are aiming to solve in silos. If you go at the source of them, you see that the common denominator is missing men, in particular, missing fathers in the home. And so when I was approached about Uncommon, and really it was just an idea and a mobile app concept that was starting to be developed. But the major idea of what Uncommon was is what grabbed my attention. So when I was approached and asked about really just reviewing some of their resources and giving some feedback, I let them have it, both, you know, very critically as well as very supportive, because I wanted to see this organization be successful. And next thing you know it, much like my first teaching experience, they called me back and said, hey, we're actually interviewing for an executive director and would like to know if you would like to interview for that job. I'm like, wait, that's not why I gave you feedback. But to me, it was worth at least talking to them, learning a little bit more. And then when I did, again, just the mission and its purpose was too strong for me to turn aside from. And really, for me, it's personal. So it's some of the things that I've shared, whether it be in my TEDx talk or some local competitions that I got to share a pitch on, for me is extremely personal. I didn't have the best relationship with my dad growing up. And my life's mission and purpose is to be a great dad to my kids. And then looking at it from a sociological standpoint and seeing the global ramifications of missing men really just evoked in me the sense of necessity to be engaged in this work.
Okay. Wow. It's pretty deep, right? Like when you start talking about, you know, your personal life and how it connects to the motivation behind doing what you're doing, like it connects to me too. So you know what? It's funny that you refer to like your father. For me, it's not, I have not connected Uncommon. So, okay. I followed you on Twitter, and then somewhere along the way, I think on Google Plus, I saw you posting information about Uncommon, or those really cool posters about Don't Be a Jack.
Yeah.
And Jack is your like mascot of who, your mascot of how not to be, correct?
Right. Exactly. Okay.
So I saw something like that, and it was connected to you. So I'm like, I'm going to check this out. So I dug a little bit deeper, and I was like a kid in a candy store when I figured out what Uncommon was, because for me, I'm looking at it like I'm in my role as a father. I don't think I'm doing what I need to do. Like, I think I'm falling short a lot. So, Uncommon has become for me a place to gather information or to become more aware of what not to do. So for example, the last poster I remember seeing was, I think it was like a challenge, like don't be a jack, put your phone away from the minute you get home until your kids go to bed, and just don't check your social media, just be present with your kids.
Yep.
And it's a very simple idea. Don't get me wrong. Like, I know that I should put the phone away, but it's like, I'll admit it. I'll be sitting with the kids and they'll get up and go grab a book or something, and I'll pull out my phone and I'll be working on a blog post, right? I don't even have to be checking social media, or I'll check my email. And next thing you know, it becomes a common thing and it becomes a problematic thing. So I see it like, for me, it's letting me connect better as a father with my kids. And I was really excited to talk to you about your work in education, because I know you do some awesome stuff with EdTech Team, but I didn't know about what you do like as an everyday teacher, which is pretty awesome in and of itself. And then the whole Uncommon piece, I feel, is like, it's huge and it's needed. And I don't know the stats, but as I'm listening to you talk about it, it brought me right back to my psychology and law studies in my undergraduate, where we talked a lot about that type of thing. So good for you for taking on such a role with Uncommon, and your vision and your leadership, I'm sure, has allowed them to grow immensely. And now you've got somebody like me rolled into it. I'm a consumer of it, which is fine, but I'm really interested in the idea and the concept, and hopefully the people listening to the podcast, when they go to the blog notes, there'll be a link there to take them over to Uncommon. They can check it out too.
That's awesome.
I told some of my friends who are parents as well, and they were very interested. Like, it's just something about, how can you become a better dad? How can you become, when you become a better dad, you probably become a better husband, a better partner.
Yep.
And so how can it not be good, right?
Right. Exactly. And then how it relates to the school. So what we did last year, when I was still as the executive director of Uncommon, is I came to the staff here at Charlotte Lab School, which, by the way, I was a board member of. So I was a board member of the school for the last 3 years before coming on staff. But nonetheless, I just approached them and said, you know what, this is the work that I do, and you know it. But if these stats are true, right? So if we know that a third of all kids in America are being raised without their biological fathers at home, then we know that this is a problem that has to also resonate here. And I know that I can walk in any school in America, and I know the stats that 68% of women of color are raising their kids without a dad at home. So this is an epidemic. So I know I can walk in any school and know that this epidemic is affecting their kids. So we deal with, anything that has to deal with discipline issues. At least a question that should be asked is what's going on at home? And an assumption could be, in many cases, that this could be part of the problem. So therefore, whether it be under the banner of Uncommon or as their own standalone organization, believe that we should do something as a concerted effort to gather the dads that are present within that community, make them more visible, have them connect to one another, and then also allow them to be surrogate fathers and mentors to the kids that don't have dads. And so that's why we created the Lab Dads program here at Charlotte Lab School. So really, the idea of Uncommon, our hope is that it's replicable wherever your spheres of influence are.
Okay, so then is there opportunities for people like me who I'm in Canada, I'm in Ontario, and if I want to kind of jump on or jump into Uncommon and kind of get things happening in my area, is that possible?
Yep. You can just go on the website and email the support, and they can give resources there if you need them. There are lots of groups that have created their own standalone groups. And again, some have created under the banner of Uncommon. Some have created their own groups and are just using the digital resources of Uncommon as a supplement. And that's what we elected to do at the school. But then I'm familiar with many other organizations that have like created their own chapters of Uncommon, which is cool. It's really, really neat to know. Church,
so then,
school, other social organization.
So there is a process that can be followed to do that. If you want to use the banner of Uncommon, it can happen.
Yep. Sure can.
Okay. Very cool. Like I said, it's got me sparked for a while now. And so it's neat to hear more about it from you. And it's neat that there's opportunity if people feel that they want to go down that road. Very cool.
Well, Roland, I need to see old Ken Shelton before he tries to jet out of this state. He just sent me a hangout, so I would love to see him as well. But I've thoroughly enjoyed being on this podcast with you. Appreciate it.
Can I grab one more thing off you before you go?
Yep.
If anybody came up to you and told you that they were feeling unmotivated, what would you say to them to help them become motivated?
Goodness, that's way too big. I mean, I don't know if I would have an answer for them as much as I would have questions. Right.
Okay. Right? So you would start with questions.
I'd start with questions. I mean, you know, did you have motivation before? What did it look like? How are you normally motivated? What's the source of? Because if someone said, "How do I get motivated?" then obviously there's a need and there's a desire to either tap into something that maybe they see externally in me or others. And or they would like to recall what they used to experience that has been, you know, a quote unquote love lost. So I just want to hear their story a little bit. I'd like to build some context around that question and before trying to just give them an answer, because so many times I know I've never loved being told any told platitudes or pat answers when behind it could be a serious issue. And that's one thing I think I've really learned with working with Uncommon is taking the time to be patient, to listen to people's stories, and to be there more longer term.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dee, for your time, for that little tidbit. Please do tell Ken I say hello, and then see if that throws him off a little bit or not. I'll let people know how they can connect with you on the blog notes. I'll give them your Twitter handle and let them go from there. But it's been a real pleasure talking to you, so thanks for your time.
Pleasure talking to you. Thanks, man.
Have a good one.
You as well. Bye now.